Do not confuse this with treatment or mental health advice or direction. Nothing on this podcast is made to supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your mental health caretakers. Although David Koslowski is a licensed marriage and family therapist, he is not functioning as a certified mental health professional in this environment. And same applies to any professional who may appear on the OG Therapy Podcast. Welcome to the OG Therapy.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of OG Therapy. And today's episode is going to be more of a public service announcement for everyone after the election. Now, a little spoiler alert, we're not going to be controversial. We're not going to be saying, boo Democrats, yay Republicans, or boo Republicans, yay Democrats. No, we're going to be talking to you about our country using a metaphor that anyone that listens to this podcast would easily be able to relate to, and that is family drama. That's right, you guys. The United States is one big, gigantic family, and we are being raised by parents who do not like each other. Now, from anyone out there listening to this that has a history of parents fighting, maybe they went through a divorce, or maybe that you're praying for them to go to get a divorce, but they never did, you will definitely connect, or I assume you'll connect with what we'll be talking about today. Because as I was talking to my producer, Brandon, before this episode, I haven't really talked much about politics. We did an episode recently about, like, you know, how to avoid politic drama at family gatherings over the holidays. But as we were talking earlier today, I thought I should probably give some suggestions and ideas to our listeners that I've given to many people that I counsel throughout the years. I'm not a political pundit. I don't have a dog in the race. I have no desire to tell you that you voted for the right person, the wrong person. I just don't want more family drama for any of you. And also friend drama, work drama, things that just make your days harder. Your day is already hard enough. If you got a difficult job and you got to put in an honest day's work, you got to save some energy for when you come home, for your family, for your friends, and also for yourself. But if you use all that energy pissing and moaning, scratching and biting and frustrated or gloating because your side won and poking and making fun of other people, I get it. That's your choice. And I'm not going to tell you that you can't do those things because you're all Americans. We live in America. So we have the freedom to be petty if we want to be petty. We have the freedom to be gloating if we want to be gloating. We have the freedom to blame our own parties. We have a freedom to blame other people around us. And all those things sometimes are not a good way to spend your time, your attention, and your energy. And it's not really that great of a hobby. At least it's not going to lead to a lot of happiness in your life. So let's get into it. Brandon, like most people, we've been listening to everything after the election. And, you know, we hear different sides. We hear people saying, woo, so excited. And we hear people saying, boo, bah, humbug. And then we hear both sides having their own opinions on the other side. But what do you think about the analogy that I use as far as, like, we are all living under the roof of two parents that hate each other, and they use different things to try to get their agenda or to influence us as their kids? Do you see that there's any truth in that, Brandon?
Yeah, I would say for sure. I think the biggest example that is, if you were to take, like, a kid that's been, or children of a divorce, and then the parents are using the kids to get back at one another, that's what it feels like too. Those were the people just going, aren't you guys supposed to work together? I'm not supposed to be the one that's getting thrown in the drama and used as fuel for this.
Yeah, a lot of teenagers I work with, especially the kids at the school, when we bring up families, we bring up their parents, sometimes they're old enough to recognize when their parents are being more adolescent than they are. In my analogy of the whole entire, you know, United States, like, we're one big family and our parents are, you know, Democrats, Republicans, yeah, and we're stuck in the middle. I look at all the youth. So everyone under 18 years old, they're like the children of the family, and everyone over 18 years old is the adolescents of the family. And I say that because adolescents have a little bit more freedom.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And they can do some things on their own. So by no means, you know, and you guys listen to this, in no means I'm saying we're all kids, we're all children, I'm not making comparison. We act like adolescents. I'm saying, as far as the family dynamics go, the people who are in power and control, the people who have all the influence and all the money, those are usually the parents in a real family situation. Something that I just see, and I want you to tell me what you think about this, Brandon, something I see that just, it really bums me out, is when parents are fighting, and they can't when they cross a certain line. So let's say you're a kid, you're watching your parents fight. It's a typical fight. Like, why didn't you clean this? Or why didn't you do that? Or you're always nagging me, like those typical types of debates. But then if one parent goes there, and when I mean go there, they say something more hurtful and more personal to the other parent. Usually the other parent doesn't say, you know what? You're right. I am a piece of bleep. And, you know, you shouldn't have married me. Like, I'm a horrible person. Usually that parent will do one of two things. They'll either shut down and they'll just leave the conversation and then just stonewall and won't talk about it. Or more commonly, they will also start throwing some shade, pull out some dirty laundry, and they'll start saying some things to their spouse that they know is going to really piss their spouse off. It's going to rattle their cage. Then when the other spouse hears it, they usually don't back down after that. They usually say, okay. And then they start to roll up their sleeves and say, oh, you want to go there? Oh, it's about like that. And then the other spouse is like, well, you started it. It's like, well, you started it first. So now it just goes to a whole nother level. Is it just me, or does it seem like since Trump came into the equation in 2015, it's just one example of just everyone going to the next level? It's like next level, next level, next level, next level, to the point where we're in this chaos. Now you listen to media, you listen to all the different types of stuff. It's like after the election, I see a few people that are being more introspective and saying, hey, here's what we did wrong, here's what we did right. But I see a lot of people doubling down on the hatred and the anger. And I'm looking at this from like a marriage family perspective, and I'm looking at this going, oh, this is not good for the family if they just keep on one-upping or trying to one-up each other. What are your thoughts, Brandon?
I think when you take the political landscape that was before Trump, I think the going below the belt or taking things there kind of happened behind the scenes, at least not in front of the
kids. Yeah, it was definitely behind the scenes. They're fighting in their bedroom. It wasn't in the living room.
Yeah, and I think at first kind of what happened before Trump was ever elected to be the Republican nominee, became president, in those first initial debates, he changed how the game was played because they were not used to that. And I think a lot of people, whatever side of the line you're on, went, I actually like that he called our parents out. And I don't think the ramifications of that have turned into something way more crazy than probably anybody expected them to be. However, I think at first when you're a kid and you see your parents fighting, and your mom says, well, yeah, you're too hard on the kids, the kids are going to be like, yeah, you're right. You absolutely, because you're going to be like, at least somebody's speaking up for me. But then what dad says back is like, I just wanted one win, not for this whole thing to blow up. And I think there's a lot of shrapnel with everybody because of it.
Yeah, parents usually have, at least most parents I work with, they have that like, hey, there's unspoken rules which you can and can't argue about in front of the kids. He definitely flipped the rules upside down.
Yeah.
And they were doing it behind closed doors like you were talking about. And one thing that's at least my opinion is that not only did he say things that weren't typically said out in public, he said them in like such like it was so random.
And almost like he'd be almost
a matter of fact, like he'd be debating with someone and then he made fun of the size of their hands. And you're like, wait, what? Like, what is it? Like, and then everybody starts going, like, look at this person. He just totally attacked the manhood of guys that he was going up against. He didn't care the women that he was debating with. He didn't care if they're a woman. It was like anyone could get it. And I'm not trying to understand him. I'm not trying to justify him. I'm just stating that. Right. Yep. And so I felt like the people he's debating with in his own party, I'm talking about like Republicans, not Democrats, just in his own party, they were like, how dare you? Like our personal information, like that's not supposed to be like, we're the creme de la creme. We're the smartest, we're best minds. He had no reverence and no respect for anyone's position. For him, it was performance-based. And if you are going to think you're going to win against me, I will crush you. Like I will come for your head and I will make fun of your masculinity. There's nothing off limits. And then other people started to do the same thing back to him. The problem was they were novice at it. They did not know how to deal with that type of aggression. He was comfortable with that combative energy. And then when he won, you know, against the Republicans, then he went to the Democrats. Then he starts going after the Democrats like that. And you could tell they didn't know how to handle it. You could tell that a lot of times they're like, oh, how dare he do this? Just like the Republicans, how dare he do this? He's such an evil, such a bad man. From my outside perspective, when I say I don't have a dog in this fight, I mean, I hate politics. I hate it so much. I can't even like watch it. I can't look at it because I compare everything in life to high school.
Yeah.
And I just look at them. I'm like, I was that stupid kid. They're that stupid kid. I don't like who I was in high school. I know a lot of people are still the same person they were in high school. I've tried really hard to be better than that person. Cause if you went to high school with me, unless you're one of my close friends, you know, you probably had some negative opinions about me. And so I look at the whole country as like a big family. When we're out on social media, when we're in public situations, we act like we're in a high school debate or a high school fight. It gets very petty, gets very like kind of gross. And so getting back to Trump, it's like when he, you know, dismantled the Republicans, broke them down, just insulted them. He does the same thing to Democrats. He wins. The animosity, I would compare that to, and I'm not going to pick a woman or a man. I'll compare that to some of the people that I've counseled and some of the parents that have come and sat in front of me. One person was outwardly, they wore their anger and their frustration on the sleeves and they were just attacking the other person. Now, the other person was like, I would never say these mean, horrible things they said to me. And when they're in front of me, I got this persona that they were calm, they were collective, and everything's fine. Until the parent that was more outwardly upset and pissed off and saying meaner things, until that parent started to share with me the text messages, the emails. They were video recording the other person doing stuff. And of course, me, they come to me like I'm the principal or, you know, like they want to report, like they want to narc their spouse out. And I would watch these things. And then I would go to the other person one-on-one and say, hey, you know, I get that they, you know, they say such horrible, mean things to you. However, I saw a text message. I saw an email. I saw this is like, I'm not accusing you of doing anything. I'm saying like, I don't see that side of you. So is this something that was like, is this a make-believe text? Is this real? Or, but I try to give them the benefit of the doubt. I usually say things like, or was it just like, they just caught you at the bad time. And I try to give them an out. Like, did they catch you at a bad time? Did they, you know, piss you off in a certain way? And with most people, they'll be like, well, yeah, they try to defend it because they don't want me to think negatively about them. So I make it really a point to be like, hey, I like you regardless whether you said that or not. I'm not married to you. I don't give a crap. Like, I'm just trying to help you guys not ruin your kids' lives in the process of you deciding if you want to stay married or get a divorce. And the person that was always doing the things behind closed doors, like the more passive aggressive things, they really had a hard time being exposed publicly. And the person who was exposing them, they wanted a witness. They wanted me to see that, yeah, they may look crazy on the outside, but this person's crazy on the inside. So you want to know how I would deal with that situation?
How would you deal with that?
I would first say, I totally get it. I understand they push you to the brink. I get it. And I'd say, please tell me why you choose to do that in texting emails, but when you're in front of me, like you don't say those things. Like I'd almost rather you say those things in front of me so I could, you know, I could see how you really feel and it's a controlled environment. I could be like a referee. And what they normally would spawn is they would say, well, that's not who I am. Like I don't like to put people on blast publicly. I don't like to do these things publicly. And I saw it was more of a personality thing. I saw their personality was more like they were really scared of what people would think of them on the outside. And the other parent was like, I'm done caring what the people think about me. I don't care if I look crazy. I don't care if I look whatever. I'm going to call everything out. So I saw one parent was actually the quiet one and they had enough and they just came out with vengeance. And the person who's more of the passive aggressive one that was playing a little bit more of the... In my opinion, they're playing more chess where the other usually you have different intelligence. You have different variations of wisdom. One parent was raised in a very manipulative, like backbiting, passive aggressive household. And the other parent was one parent's more raised more black and white. The other one was more like maybe they had a parent of their own that had their own personality disorders. Yeah, right. Yeah. And so you could tell them like, oh, these people came from different games. They were playing different games. So the person who is more passive aggressive, that was usually the person, male or female, didn't matter. That was usually the person that was thinking about this as a long-term plan and approach, fearful of what people think of them on the outside. So their persona to everyone else was very like above board, very angelic, very reasonable, maybe not angelic, but very reasonable and very, you know, willing to go along with the therapeutic process. But behind closed doors, they had vengeance and hate that they would let out. It was a personality thing. And when I saw the personality of the person who was being more behind and doing things more in a passive aggressive way, I would always try to get them to come out with that information, but I had to be very careful how I got them to come out with that information because they were scared that I would think they were a bad parent or a bad spouse as well. So here's the main trick I would do. I would tell them that in order for me to do my job, I needed them to be more honest, not in a mean, aggressive way, but I'd explain to them what assertive vulnerability means. And I know you know what that means, but for our listeners, assertive vulnerability, assertive means a bold expression of self. Vulnerability means to be open, to expose yourself, right? So I'd say assertive vulnerability is like, I want you to boldly express your most sincere thoughts, feelings, and opinions, and do it directly to the person's face and taking your time. And the pushback I'd usually get is, well, they can't handle the truth. That's why I have to be more passive aggressive, why I do these little nefarious things. And sometimes I could see why they do that, because maybe it was the wife and the husband was overbearing, this big, strong guy, so she had to do it around his back. But other times it was the man who was a big, strong guy, and the wife was 5 foot and the guy's 6'6", whatever. Yeah. And he was doing these things. So as I'd tell the person who's being more passive aggressive, in today's world, one form of passive aggressive behavior is gaslighting. And so I would tell that parent to write out how they really felt. And then after they wrote out how they really felt, I would coach them on how to say it to their spouse in a very direct way, an honest way, but not picking a fight with them. And what they found out is that they did not have that skill. These people would come to the conversation with their spouse. I would prepare their spouse, say, listen, hear what they have to say. I would tell the spouse who was being more wearing their emotions on their sleeve, I would tell them, hey, give your spouse time to talk. Do not interrupt them. Do not roll your eyes. Don't say, yeah, you don't really believe that. Just sit there, pay close attention, do a couple of social visual cues, like look down at the ground, nod your head a little bit, look up at them, try to show like with your facial expressions that you're trying to understand where they're coming from. And if you do that, your spouse will get better at dealing with you directly. If you don't do that, they're just going to double down on being more passive aggressive and doing things behind closed doors. I think that's what's happened in our government over time. It doesn't really matter who the people are. I see there's different personalities going on. Some personalities, they want to look like they're more righteous. They want to look like, what do the kids call it? Virtue signaling,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they want to say like, we care more about this marginalized group of people than you. And I'm going to use the Democrats more of that example. I think there's more personalities in the Democrats that, and I'm not saying that all Democrats use
virtue signaling.
Virtue signaling. I don't even know what the terminology is. I mean, I hear it all the time. I'm not saying that all Democrats use virtue signaling. I'm saying as a personality, it seems to me that a lot of the Democrats are wanting to be more like seen as an honorable person who's intelligent, who's caring, kind, and understanding. I think that's kind of like what the Democratic Party originally was founded upon, about like freedom of speech, the hippie
working
movement,
class.
The working class, stuff like that. And I see more of the Republicans, very generally speaking, I see they're more the personality of like, that's like, you're a liar.
Yeah.
Right, like just call it straight out. So the Republicans have that more direct call it out. The Democrats have more like, oh, it's more nuanced. It's complex, and they get into the like more details about things, and the Republicans tend to be more brash and more aggressive. And so these people over here, and I'm referring to the Democrats. If you can't see my hand, I'm holding up a left hand. The Democrats in this whole situation, and I'm doing kind of a diagnosis of our country right now.
Yeah.
They seem to be more personalities that really care about what people think of them. On the right, they like the bold, brash, like, I'm going to say the wild F-boy thing. I'm going to say the thing that shocks things more. And then you have Donald Trump, right? So Donald Trump is definitely more of the, I don't care what you think about me. And he's very aggressive, very in your face. But then it seems to me behind closed doors that people get to know him really well, like the people at least work with him now, maybe this happened after he shot, they're kind of like, he's a paper tiger. He's like not that tough.
Yeah.
Like behind closed doors, he just presents that like win at all costs. Like he has that business, like kill or be killed mentality. And the people over here, I think they're just as competitive, the Democrats, but they kind of established certain rules that we don't talk like certain things. So what I feel like Donald Trump did is he increased the passive aggressiveness of those personalities, because like, we can't come out of pocket and we can't be as aggressive towards everybody on that side. But then recently the terminology in this past election started to come out with more Hitler, this and that, which was odd because the Democrats, at least when I say Democrats, Democrat media or people who are more Democratic on that side, they seem becoming more aggressive and less passive aggressive. And then I'm seeing the people on the right, they're becoming a little bit more passive aggressive and not as aggressive they were before. So I'm starting to see a little balance shift, because when I know a lot of people recently said they've been calling Trump Hitler for like the past 8 years. Maybe I just don't follow it that much, but I saw it more in this election cycle than I saw it before. At least that's what I heard. And I saw the Republicans over here that were saying like, you know, the Democrats, all they want to do, very general, of course, here, all the Democrats want to do is they want to take away your freedom of speech. They want to do this. They want to do that. So we're going to stop them from doing that. Okay. So you have this really polar opposites. But then when I'd see certain people getting involved in the conversation, people that were a little bit more not willing to be very aggressive like Trump, not willing to be passive aggressive like the extreme people on the Democratic Party. So I'm using both extremes. When I'd see people that were kind of more in the center on both parties, they come together and they start talking, I was like, those are more of the adults in the room. And I think America is closer to those people if you just put people in a room and had a conversation, if there was no social media going on, if there was no cameras going on. Now, some may listen and say, you're naive. You don't know how bad it is politically. I would argue that I'm not naive because I actually talk to people behind closed doors, not on social media. I have talked extreme left, extreme right. And when they talk to me, they're not really that extreme left. They're not that extreme right. Their personalities are veering towards more an extreme version of their own personality.
That makes a lot of sense.
So I know I said a lot, but what are some of your thoughts about what I just said? Because I didn't tell any of this to you before we got on the podcast.
Yeah, I would say first off, like kind of backtracking to what we're talking about with when Trump came out in those initial debates, aggression was raised, regardless if it was passive aggressive or direct aggression.
As he amped it up big time.
Yes. As a result, everybody's aggression therefore ramped up. I think it put a lot of people, if you're thinking about it from a competitive game standpoint, is let's say you're playing a game of football. That team comes out and they pop you in the jaw first. They hit you hard. It's like, oh, it's that kind of game. You have to ramp up your mentality. Well,
and they did something completely uncharacteristic. Yeah. They didn't do the normal game plan.
No, when you get shell-shocked, it just logically makes sense that you're
going to fight. That's why a lot of Republicans hated Trump when he first came out too, because he wasn't a real Republican.
Yeah, it was
a Trumpican.
Yeah, Trumpican. It came out pretty crazy. So I think there's that aspect of it. And I think from that point, it became a grab for control and power of who's in charge, because there was a fear of the unknown of this aggression has never been seen before in politics. What does this mean? Does this mean it is this extreme of somebody like Hitler? Is it is this extreme of this? Is it because it's everybody's reaction to the initial aggression and it's just built over time? There's also the aspect of you can gain friends depending on your political statement, how far you go on either side. So I think it draws people to be like, yeah, I'm going to say those exact same things, even if behind closed doors. I don't know exactly if I feel that way or not, but I believe it enough to gain friends for it. And I think there's that social aspect to it. And I also think, too, there's the aspect of the kids got lost and forgotten about. The parents have been fighting for 6 hours and the kids are like, I still need dinner. Like, but I'm 7. What am I supposed to do here?
How many people didn't vote because they're like, this is stupid.
Yeah, the whole thing's stupid. Just they don't want to participate. Cause the other thing too,
they're tired of watching their parents fight endlessly.
And then really what it comes down to too is if you've been in that situation, what's the worst thing for a kid to have happen? To be called on as a witness by the parents and be like, so whose side are you on? It's like, excuse me. You know, I have to spend time with both of you guys, right? Like, this is not fair or right. And I think that's the thing, too, is it's not this party should be running it. This party should be running it. It's the parties at all times, no matter who's in charge, should be working together to collectively help America and the American people. And regardless of what side you're on, That's not happening. It is, we're going to do everything. If your party is in the House and the other parties are in the Senate and president, well, as we got to stand true and block everything. It's like, well, is that, that's not compromise. That's not finding a solution and vice versa. So it's this whole game of, I see why they've taken that extreme of, we have to have everything to get things through because there is no collaboration. So how do you force collaboration? I think people are saying we're going to strong arm them. And then once we get our stuff done, then we can collaborate. And I think both sides have both said we need to collaborate, but who's going to go first?
Very true. And I think the reason why we can have this conversation now is because the divorce has been finalized.
Yeah.
And again, just saying, I'm stating what happened. I'm not stating on what side I am. The divorce happened and the Republicans got the House, the custody of the kids.
Yeah. They got everything.
They got everything. So there's really two choices. And I can only talk from my professional standpoint. I've worked with couples where one person did not get anything. The other person got everything. And in that, there's kind of it's a fork in the road. Do you double down and you drain your bank account, drain your family, parents' bank account to more lawsuits, more legalities, just go, go, go and attack it and draw it out as long as you can. And for anyone that's listened to this podcast, that's ever been through a lawsuit or some sort of law thing, I've been through one in my life. I was given money from the lawsuit and I don't ever want to go. The money wasn't even worth it. It just mentally and emotionally, you don't have peace in your life. I was agitated all the time. I was fighting with my girlfriend at that time. It was just always just like intense and agitation. So even when I won, I felt like that was a loss of time of my life. Like I didn't get to enjoy my life at that time. And so obviously the Democrats lost. So it's one of those things. And I'd be saying the same thing if the Republicans lost. Yeah. Like, how are you going to handle this? Are you going to watch the tape? So what I mean by referring to the tape, as athletes, all athletes know, any performer, if you're a musician, anything, sometimes it's hard to go and watch the game. It's hard to watch the performance. If it was a bad performance and you lost, or you just had a bad, you know, night on stage, whatever, you know, whatever type of performance you've had, whether it be an athlete or musician or performing arts, when you had a bad night on stage, that's the time, or a bad game, you never want to watch the film.
No.
Like you want to hide. You go, no, I don't want to look. I don't want to look. In your mind, like, I don't want to be robbed of my anger and my frustration and the reality that I built for myself. Or you take the other approach. You watch the film. You rewind it. You critique it. Harsh critique of your own performance, what you did, what you should have done. What cues did you miss out in the marriage? He's going back to the analogy of the marriage. And so when I'm helping people having a healthy divorce, and a healthy divorce is plainly put, one that doesn't ruin the kids' lives.
Fair enough.
The kids can be hurt by it because divorce sucks and hard, but divorce doesn't mean that their lives have to be ruined. Doesn't mean they have to be asked that question, whose side you are for the rest of your life. And just like I tell all people that go through a divorce, you thought the divorce was hard. You thought that was difficult. The only thing that's harder than the divorce is trying to remarry or date someone again with a crazy ex. That is the most unattractive thing for all you guys out there listening to this, any girls out there listening to this, whether you're dating a crazy ex, or you're married to a crazy ex, but specifically if you're married to someone and you call them the crazy ex and you make them the crazy person, and let's say they are the crazy person to you, but you just build them up as they're crazy. They're Hitler. Sound familiar? They're this horrible person, Oh, by the way, my kids are being raised by that horrible person.
Yeah.
So am I going to help that person be a better version of themselves by just attacking, never stop attacking? Probably not. So this is the choice everyone has to make in this marriage situation. I think that our government and individual people make this choice one way or the other. I just hope more people make the choice I'm about to suggest. Or the other choice is you look at the film, you look at the tape, realize what do we miss? What do we not do right? And how do we try to work with our ex? Because if we want to move forward, if we want to get better, dealing with confrontation with an ex after a breakup is only going to thwart any of your progress. It's going to make it really difficult to have a good relationship with the kids of the family. So I guess I'm speaking to the Democrats right now because they're the ones that lost. And I'm not speaking to the Democratic Party. I'm speaking to just people, like anyone that cares to listen to this analogy. I'm not a political, you know, advisor. I literally don't even know that much about politics. So I've just been watching all these years. I've just been diagnosing this from the only eyes of diagnosis I know how. That's mental, emotional, and family. And I see our country as a family that is not a amended family. It has not healed from anything. Of course, it's too soon to heal. But since 2015, 2016, it's been a long divorce. I feel the divorce is finally official. Now, everybody on the Democratic side is going to have to make a choice. Hey, we're going to give this time. We're going to try to work this out, try to figure out how do we find common ground, or are we just going to just keep on attacking? I'm not going to tell people to stop attacking because that's your freedom. If you want to go and support any sort of action against Donald Trump to get him impeached, to get him thrown in jail, that's your prerogative. That's your right. I just caution you, at what expense to the children of the family? Right? Like, how's that going to affect the kids of the family? Is this more about an individual's pride and ego, or is it more about what's best for the country? Now, the argument may be like, I have to fight because this guy is Hitler and this is not best for the country. Well, just remember, your kids chose to live with Hitler. That's what just happened. And when I say your kids, not all of them. If you got a family of eight kids, about six of them at least, right?
Yeah.
Six or seven, I don't know what the actual percentages were. They chose to live with that person. I talk to plenty of parents that are like, how can my kids choose to live with my enemy? And I tell them, if you throw more shade on your enemy, if you make this person a more demonized version, they're going to rise that occasion. They're going to fight you more. And the expense will be now your kids have to live with someone that doesn't have the time and energy for them, that are not going to do the best job as a parent. I'm not saying that you have to befriend them and be their best friend, but finding common ground, finding something you have in common. And the one common thread I believe this family metaphor has that the Democrats and Republicans all have in common is their children, meaning the people of this country. Now to the Republicans, there's also the same issue that I've had with moms and dads that got everything that they wanted, or majority of what they wanted, not everything, majority of what they wanted in the divorce. And now they're left with the decision. Do I go around gloating? Do I go around and telling all my family, see, I told you he or she was crazy. I told you I was the right one. See, the attorneys, everybody favored in my direction. I got this, I got that. Even the kids chose to come live with me. Well, be careful of throwing shade on the person that you created this beautiful family with. Be careful that you're not attacking and saying, I'm right, I won, and you're being braggadocious about it, and you're putting it in their face, because how do you think that's going to affect them? That's not going to want them to want to work with you. That's not going to cause them to be like, hey, listen, you know, you're right, I am a horrible person, and that's why you got everything you wanted. I'm just going to bend the knee and do what you tell me to do. I would hope that the people that have influence on the Republican Party, like real influence on the Republican Party, will also stop the narrative right now, because the election's over. Stop the narrative of we have to take control of our country back. We have to live in the manner of which we think it should be lived. You already won. There's nothing else to prove. So now get to work to try to be able to figure out how to connect with people who maybe you said some disparaging things again. I'm really hoping that Trump talks to some of the people when it's all said and done. It's like, hey, I know I said some horrible, mean things about you. That's part of the game. However, I know we have to work with each other and we have to be businesslike about it. I think that's easier for certain personalities than others. It would really go well for the kids if Trump and the people that are close to him, if they were to do that, if they were to try to focus on the relationships now and building back a better family than the one that they inherited, meaning the one that Trump came into office with, the one that Kamala and Biden came into office with. We have a serious social health problem in our country. Our financial crisis, our mental health crisis, our physical health crisis, you know, border crisis, all these things, they actually are social issues. They're social issues because there's people behind every single one of these issues. There's people that have to make tough decisions. There's people that need to make decisions that represent the family, aka the country, and what the country wants and what the country is choosing. Whether you believe the country voted right or wrong or not, they voted, and that's what it is right now. So I guess in this conversation, this podcast, I really want the same thing that a lot of great people that I've always admired, from Martin Luther King to, you know, just list goes on and on. People that just feel that we are a better family, we're a better country if we work hard together, and we see across the aisle, we see across the street, other people working hard, we're working hard, at least we can find that commonality. We all love our family. We love our friends. We want to preserve this country to be as great as this country could possibly be. We'll see what Trump is going to do with the country in the next 4 years. If you hate him and you want him to burn and die in hell, I don't blame you, because I've talked to a lot of people that feel the same way about their spouses. But just like I remind everyone that feels that hatred and the anger towards their ex, just be careful how much that hatred can eat you up inside and how much that can affect your kids. You have a huge influence over every single person in your family and every single person in your country. So be careful and cautious with how you wield that influence.
I'd like to say just on that, whenever a major change happens in life, regardless if the kids, you're the parents, divorce, you won the divorce, you didn't win the divorce, your party won, your party lost, whatever. Major things like that, I think most people can reflect back on life. Those are the moments you're kind of being forced to self-reflect, regardless if you won or not. Things broke. Look at why things broke, because that's not the goal. The goal is not to have all this hatred. If things could go back and forth between left and right, but America was growing and people were growing and felt like everybody was being taken care of, that'd be great. But whatever happened in the last 20 years of politics has broken that. So this is a time for everybody to go take a deep breath and be, we're all trying to do the same thing. If you think it's going to go one, it should happen this way or should happen this way. If the collective goal is for society to be better, we have to remember that that's in our coworkers. We don't need to be gloating about it and just saying, hey, people voted for what they thought was the best way to get it done. But at the same time, as we all have the same goal, doesn't matter what color it is. We just want to have the same goal of a better society and our kids getting taken care of.
Can't agree more. The loudest people in the room, whether you're Democrat or Republican, the loudest people in the room, the people who are being more out of pocket, you don't really have as much influence as you think you do. And that's Democrats or Republicans. The best influence, in my opinion, is when you allow people's thoughts, feelings, and opinions, their most genuine thoughts, feelings, and opinions, have a great influence over you. First, you listen to them, you hear them out, you consider their position, you try to make, you know, allowances, amendments, and do whatever you can to try to appease all the people in your family or in your party or in the opposite party. But at the end of the day, we don't just want to have a blended country or a blended family. We want to have a mended family. As always, you guys, thanks for visiting us here on OG Therapy. Let us know what you think about this episode and this podcast. And until next time, be cool.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.